This is Joseph Gervasi. I'm here with Sean Gastillo, and today is the 17th of November, 2013. We're conducting this interview at Sean's lovely apartment here in the Noe Valley section of San Francisco, and this is part of Loud Fest Philly. Hi, Sean.
Hello.
So let's go back to young Sean. I know that you were born in Glassboro, New Jersey.
I was born in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm already wrong.
Grew up most of my life in New Jersey, though. In Glassboro, okay. Yeah.
So what year were you born?
1970.
Okay. And your parents moved to Glassboro from Pennsylvania?
So we moved from Pennsylvania to Virginia, and then Virginia to New Jersey. And we lived in a town next to Glassboro called Pittman.
Okay.
And then we moved to Glassboro, finally.
Right. So young Sean, growing up, well, prior to discovery of punk and any of that kind of stuff, what were your interests?
Jeez, let's see. I can't even remember. I've always liked music, kind of alternative music. But then prior to that, just hanging out with friends, typical teenage stuff. Nothing really remarkable.
Okay. Well, going back a little bit, your parents came over from the Philippines, right? Like, they're
yes.
First generation here.
Yes.
Why do they like to come over here?
Well, my father wanted to go to grad school in Pennsylvania. So I was actually born in around State College, Pennsylvania, while my father was going to school. It was my father and mother that came, and then they had left my four brothers and one sister back in the Philippines while my father completed his studies, but then they had me. And then eventually we moved to Pittman, New Jersey, and then at that point that's when my father brought everyone else back to New Jersey, from New Jersey.
So how did the punk come into your life?
I have an older brother, Angelo. He was living in New York at the time, and he kind of got into the punk thing back then.
So this would be like early 80s, or what time was he getting into that?
Probably early 80s.
Okay.
He introduced me to, gave me some mixtapes of punk music, which included The Exploited and Dead Kennedys and Black Flag. And that really piqued my interest, and that's kind of what helped me start getting into punk rock and all that good stuff.
So what did you think that these things were kind of saying to you? Like, were they in any way communicating to, like, something that you were looking for, or, what was the appeal, because of this weird music?
It was just, at the time it was kind of exciting and new, because it was so different from what I was used to. And speaking with my brother, he would talk about going to shows in New York and slam dancing, and he had a mohawk and a leather jacket, and I thought, wow, that's pretty cool, because it was just so different and almost rebellious.
Yeah.
In a way. So, and I thought, oh, that's kind of appealing.
So what did your parents think, coming over to America and then having their son with this, ridiculous hair, doing all this crazy stuff? And this is not, I'm talking about your brother, not even you yet.
Yeah. They thought it was, crazy American, just a crazy trend.
So they didn't try to shut him down?
No, because he was living in New York, so there'd be, they didn't really, dictate to him, how to live his life, so.
Right. So then I guess you began to pick up, probably more serious interest in this stuff, digging deeper into it.
Yep, and then I started getting, exploring more, getting some guidance from my brother's suggestions. But him being in New York, there's only so much you could do. So then I kind of went out and explored, going to the record stores, going to South Street.
So you were then coming into Philadelphia.
Exactly.
I guess there was nothing, I know this from some experience in high school, there's probably not a lot of that in that part of South Jersey.
No. So Philadelphia was my place to go to, find these different things and,
How did you get into the city from there?
I'll take the bus, New Jersey Transit.
Right.
I would make my trek. It'd be about 18 miles southeast of Philadelphia, but with the bus, it took almost an hour because of all the different stops it would have to take.
Yeah.
But, I would do that on a constant basis because, that's where I could find things.
Yeah.
And do things.
When did you start attending shows in Philly?
God, I'm trying to think if I can. It was probably. I can't even remember the first show I went to. Probably late 80s, possibly, early 90s.
I would say probably late 80s.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we were doing stuff by the late 80s.
Yeah.
I started going to shows in 87, so I imagine you probably went maybe even before me, right?
Possibly.
Or, yeah.
Can't remember.
Okay, well, fair enough. But so, initially, when you started going to shows in Philadelphia, where were you going to see the shows? Do you remember where the shows were happening?
So, Revival, mm-hmm. Club Pizzazz.
Yeah, definitely then late 80s and then 90s, because Pizzazz.
Yeah. So, it's kind of coming back to me. But, yeah, I mean, those were the venues, you know, I would find out about these shows through the flyers on South Street, or, you know, we'd go together.
Yeah,
shows.
We haven't met yet. Well, you wound up taking over Philly Zine from
yep.
Jesse Townley. So
exactly.
How is it that you came to meet Jesse and became aware of the zine?
So I had bought his zine, Philly Zine, in Skins. On
yeah.
South Street.
Why don't you explain maybe what Skins was for folks who might not know that?
So there were two stores, Zipperhead and Skins, and they sold punk clothing and, you know, accessories. So
you were buying some bondage trousers with the legs tied together so you can walk.
Or I'd be buying like a Dead Kennedy's Holiday in Cambodia shirt, or
right.
You know, Black Flag shirt, Exploited shirt. That's where you would go.
Yeah.
So I had remember seeing Jesse's zine on the counter. I said, "Oh, this is pretty cool." So I bought it.
Did you know what? Were you familiar with zines at all at the time, or was it the first?
One of the first, yeah, and at least one of the first local ones that I got, and. I was like, wow, okay. So then I started reading the zine. I thought, this is pretty cool. And then I contacted Jesse and then kind of went from there.
Right. So you were hanging out with him, or you met him sometimes?
Exactly.
Right. So then how do you wind up being given the mantle that you bestowed upon the Philly zine to take forward?
Well, Jesse was moving to California. So he had asked me if I wanted to take over. And I said, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting and kind of almost an honor that he would allow me to take the name and kind of carry it on and continue the publication.
Right. Now, did he have the relationship with the woman that we were involved with for a while? Why don't you explain kind of what the story of that was? Like, who was this woman? Because she, you know, she played a kind of significant role in printing a lot of zines for people.
Exactly.
For a cheap price.
Yeah. So Jesse knew this woman from, I can't remember what college down in the southern part of New Jersey, closer to the shore. But she worked out of this community college doing printing, and I'm assuming it was printing mostly for the college, but she did some stuff on the side. Which included printing zines.
Yeah, I mean, essentially she would just, like, people would just pay her to run them off on their equipment with their paper and everything.
Exactly, and it was kind of on the down low, so...
Yeah.
but it was pretty cool, because she did help quite a bit getting these zines printed at a cheap price, so we could distribute it and sell them at a good price, so...
Right. So when you took over the zine, was there something that you kind of, like, wanted to bring to it, or, did you have some kind of like vision for what you wanted to do with this thing, with this Philly zine?
Well, I definitely wanted to carry it on and, you know, cover the Philadelphia scene. But in some ways, I also wanted to bring my voice to it, which included, looking over the scene and kind of giving it a unique voice in terms of bringing like a homosexual voice to the scene. Back then at the time, I wasn't, not that I wanted to make it a completely gay zine, that was not my intentions, but it would have been nice. It's nice to have a different point of view.
Yeah, I think what's really great about that is that was very unique for the time. I mean, I think that there's been a lot more acceptance of gay within punk, and certainly within greater society, but at that time, there really weren't that many vocal gay punk voices coming out in that world.
Sure. Yes.
So for you then, who were you looking at? Like, who were the people who you felt were kind of like leading the way or speaking to you to say, this is something that can be done or should be done?
So Mike Bullshit was definitely a huge influence in my kind of punk life. He was in a band called Go. He was based out of New York, and he was an openly gay singer for a hardcore band in New York, you know, and it was just kind of like pretty cool. And, you know, at the time, New York, the hardcore scene in New York was very kind of macho driven, a lot of straight edge, you know, angry, a lot of posturing, and then there was Mike Bullshit, yeah. Out and about, you know, didn't really faze him, and I thought that was a really great inspiration.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I thought was really neat about Go and Mike Bullshit was that I think that prior to that, when you would have gay punk bands, they would have like sort of like sometimes like a fey approach or something like that, or kind of like yeah. a more flouncy thing, where Mike Bullshit was doing fast, aggressive male hardcore.
Yeah.
You know, and there wasn't a campy element to it, which I think was really unique in, you know, at first I think it probably allowed some people to accept it more, but also I like the idea that he had a masculine presence rather than he was like, wasn't dressed up like a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you probably appreciated that as well.
Yeah, so, it was absolutely amazing to be friends with him, to get to know him. I used to go up to New York quite a bit.
You went up to the shows at ABC No Rio, right?
ABC No Rio.
Why don't you kind of explain a little bit about what ABC was for folks who might not know what that was?
So ABC No Rio was a place in the East Village that had shows. It was kind of in the basement of this place, and it was relatively small. But incredibly active with lots of shows and really exciting time to be part of. So, you know, again, I would go on a weekly basis and go up to New York, take the train and hang out with Mike and then go to the shows and help out. And you know, just a wonderful time.
Yeah, yeah. Were there any other gay people involved in punk with a voice that you had an interest in, you know, what they were doing at that early time?
Jason Kill the Robot had a zine. Kill the Robot was a zine that I think he was based at the time in Ohio. It's hard to remember at the moment. But he was gay, is gay, and involved in hardcore. And I liked his zine. Very nicely laid out, really cool articles, lots of great commentary, he was involved with the hardcore scene. I'm like, oh, this guy's pretty cool.
Yeah. So was layout, did that begin to be something that was of interest to you around that time? Because it seems like you've always had an interest in technology, which you've now kind of taken forward, you know,
yep.
well into your career. So you were kind of there in the early days of, you know, consumers being able to make those kind of...
Exactly. So back then, I can't even describe the style, but it was kind of, they were using PageMaker and, you know, doing really fun things with fonts, really cool design, very bold, but yet very modern and minimalistic, and I enjoyed that kind of design at the time when the zines were coming out. So, design and all that kind of... things with it have always been interest for me, and you know that's another reason why I liked working with Philly Zine. You know, mm-hmm. being able to design something and you know have it produced and then sell it, and
yeah,
people
yeah.
enjoying it. So that was definitely another aspect.
I don't know if you ever saw this, but there's a guy in Chicago who made he has like an art gallery type thing, and his collective made this book of different like zine covers and stuff, and he has. Some of your Philly Zine covers.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, which was like sold in this gallery and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
It was pretty neat to see it in there. So he's got that one with the Robbie the Robot.
Yeah. Oh, how neat.
Yeah, it was always great for me, like when we started working together, that you could do this design stuff because I had no fucking idea how to do it. Like, I was just excited, like, there's a guy who could use different fonts and different sizes. It was incomprehensible that this could be done.
Yeah.
So eventually, at some point, I mean, we met maybe like probably the late 80s. Perhaps I don't remember precisely how we
remember.
If we met through some another person or maybe we just started talking in a show.
No, so I remember this because I had written into Maximum Rock and Roll and was looking for gay skinheads at the time.
What were you looking for?
I don't know. It was just interesting because you know I wanted to meet more gay people in the scene.
Yeah.
And You know, I don't know why I chose skinheads, but...
I think I know why you chose gay skinheads.
So they were uber masculine, so obviously... I just wanted to meet people and get involved more in the scene, and I think you had written me.
Okay.
Because I was so close. Gay skinheads. Yeah. Well, because you noticed where I lived, and...
Yeah, I was in Blackwood, you were in Glasgow.
Yeah, exactly, and I think that's how we met.
Yeah, oh, that's good. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Did you want to meet any gay skinheads?
No, not at all.
Oh, well...
I think I might have gotten maybe one or two responses, but never actually physically met one.
Yeah. I remember, I don't know if you remember this, how you came out to me. Do you remember this?
Were we driving somewhere?
We were driving, I think, back to my parents' house.
Yeah.
And I knew that you were gay because usually most people, when you meet them, they think nobody knows.
Yeah.
But it's usually really clear because I was kind of like laying out little hints and little things to see how people, react.
Yeah.
And when I remember you started to tell me this, and I already knew it, so I was just waiting to see how you were going to say it. And I remember we pulled up to my parents' house, and when you kind of finished saying it, I just opened the car door and went, no! Just like reacted like, oh, this is horrible. I'm joking.
Yeah.
Because of course I knew, and I think you were a little taken aback by that. And I was like, no, of course I knew.
Yeah,
So we began to... Forged the Cabbage Collective, and you were one of the integral members of that group. And Cabbage Collective has been discussed in some other parts of the interviews, but I wanted to kind of have your take on that as well, if you have some recollection of like what we were trying to do and why, and what the idea was for Philadelphia.
So, geez, the Cabbage Collective, very fond memories. It was definitely pretty cool to be part of that and to be. Especially in the beginning. From my recollection, it was, we wanted to kind of embody the whole DIY ethic and bring it to the Philadelphia shows. I know at the time there were probably other people putting on shows, but I don't think there were collectives of people doing that.
Right.
So it's just bringing more shows to the city and then also creating a sense of community. I remember some of the punk picnics things that were put on, so it was pretty cool. Or when we would have shows, people would bring food, vegan food, and as part of the admission, people would have food. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it always kind of helps people sort of relax and behave in a friendly manner when they're eating. You're not going to really have a fight after you ate like the world's worst vegan chili or like a giant vat of spaghetti or something like that.
The collective, pretty cool to be part of, and for my part, for the Collaborative Collective, I know that I took care of some of the communication. So whenever we'd have shows, I'd post them on Usenet. I'm not sure if people are familiar with Usenet.
Yeah, maybe you should, for kind of explain what that was, and this sort of, it was the internet of...
Exactly.
So this is like early mid-90s.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what then existed, and how were you aware of its existence?
So I think we maintained a D-list, a distribution list, or listserv, when shows would come up. So I'd take care of that communication. I'd also post things in Usenet, which was kind of a big bulletin board. And it's still being used to this day, but not probably to the extent as back then. But I would post to like alt.music.hardcore and then any other sub groups where people would be interested in learning about the show. So I'd post all the different shows that were upcoming, and then even post shows for other people. That we're putting on in the area, so that was a good way to keep people updated and keep in touch with people and have people learn about what's happening in Philadelphia.
Right. What was your portal into this world? Do you have access through where you were living, or did you have to go to a library or
so in college? So go to the computer labs and post this stuff, and then at home I would have access to the internet. And I would do it there. So.
Yeah, so you had like a dial-up thing.
A dial-up thing, a BBS, I think they called them back then.
I never had any of that kind of stuff, so it's all sort of alien to me. I was just happy that there was a person who knew what this thing was and that apparently other people used it.
Yeah.
Which, of course, seems completely ridiculous now, but at the time,
Yeah.
Did you see that society was clearly moving in that direction towards like a wider distribution of that?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The internet was still kind of youngish at the time, and you know it was evolving. When I think about the web browsers and the web pages back then, how crude they are back then, and then now how so advanced they are. So, that's why one of the reasons why I like technology, because it was a very easy way to keep in touch with people and let people know what's going on. I tried to do electronic versions of Philly Zine and try to distribute it that way.
Yeah, what was it? I'm trying to remember.
I probably don't even have any versions of that, but I would, try to create the zine and then just try to distribute that way.
Yeah.
But that was a long time ago. I don't think it did very well, so.
Yeah. It was far, far ahead of your time in that regard. So we worked together for a while with No Longer a Fanzine as well. You were doing a lot of the design stuff for me for that thing. Any thoughts or feelings about that extravaganza?
It was pretty fun. When Philly Zine went away, I remember we did that split issue.
Transition.
So in a way, it was kind of nice to kind of step back from doing day-to-day stuff with the zine and then kind of helping you out with layout or writing or pictures. So it was kind of neat to be a contributor that way.
Yeah. Now you saw then zine culture really exploded in the 90s. I mean, when you started doing Philly Zine, there were a fairly finite number of zines, and there was certainly a significant community, but then there was sort of a great media spotlight on zines moving into the 90s, which of course dissipated as the internet rose. But so did you feel like you were, it was interesting to be a part of zine culture as zine culture became something that all of a sudden everybody knew about?
Absolutely. So when I kind of stepped back from doing Philly Zine, what I started doing, I had my own zine distribution company called I Love You Distribution, and I was doing that because I would find these really amazing zines and I would kind of want to share it with everyone. So
what were some of your favorites at the time that you were getting in, if you remember any of the titles? I don't mean to put you on the spot. I know this was 3,000 years ago.
I know this was a long time ago. I'm trying to think. God, I can't remember any ones at the moment.
Did they involve dialers and systems of making?
Oh, yeah. So, what was it? The punk one, the Scam Punks.
Scam, yeah.
And then Scott Bibin had his zine, which I loved. Because it was just chaotic and crazy, and they fit his personality. So. So I kind of like that kind of scam kind of thing. Not so much that I enjoyed doing it myself, but
did you own a dialer?
I think I did. Yes, from Radio Shack, a blue dialer or whatever, black box or whatever, one of those things. I did at the time, and I did use it.
Yeah.
But I thought it was kind of neat because it was kind of in a way hacking. A little bit hacking of the system. So
did you do the mod on it, or did you have somebody do it?
I think there was like a chip you had to get or something, but I probably got help from somebody to do it. So
Last night when I presented the Loudfest thing afterwards, I was talking to Mike McKee, I was talking to Bill Florio and a couple of younger folks. And we mentioned the dialer, and I could tell by their faces that they didn't know what we were talking about.
Yeah.
So I had to explain to them, and they just had no idea what the dialer was. And it just seems like, there was, if you were of a certain age and involved in punk, the dialer booked every tour for everybody. And every time you went on a trip or something, you're just like plugging this thing in, putting the quarters in, in order to make a phone call that was like $2.50, $3 or something.
Yeah.
Almost seems insane. Even back then, those phone calls were so goddamn expensive.
Yeah. So I like that. I like that kind of aspect of the punk scene. Because in a way, it's a do-it-yourself,
So moving forward, ultimately, you wound up leaving Philadelphia, moving out here to San Francisco. I imagine your connection to punk is not, quite as strong as it once was.
Yeah.
How do you feel about punk now, or your time that you were most actively involved in the thing, looking back?
When I look back, I still remember it fondly. If it were not for punk, I probably wouldn't be here where I'm at with my career or my life. You know, being involved in punk was definitely an eye-opener for me. It allowed me to become, you know, help me come out to, you know, friends and family, and then the world in a way. It gave me a voice, it gave me inspiration. And then it opened my eyes to traveling and meeting other people. So when we used to do those road trips back in the day, I just loved that aspect of traveling in a car and talking to people and, you know, being in close quarters and, you know, the good things and the bad things. When I look back on it, I'm like, wow, it's an amazing experience. And, you know, driving across the country, I think I've hit, as a result of our different road trips that we've had, I think I've been to every state in this, in America, except for Alaska. But because of all the traveling we did with the tours and everything, we just got to see the country.
Yeah, and we were talking about this last night, where you said that you still have that desire to travel around, maybe coming from that. So because of the lifestyle that you lead, you're able to kind of continue doing that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm always thirsty for meeting people and interacting with different, cultures. I have a thirst for that. And I always feel if I don't travel, you know, in 2 or 3 months, I get really itchy. Like, I need to go somewhere. It's just like I need to travel. So, unfortunately, I used to be, with my work now, recently my job position's changed, so I don't get to travel as much for work anymore. So I have to kind of carve out time, my own personal time, to do the travel. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely the travel, it gave me the travel bug.
Right. Definitely. To slip it back just for a minute, you're talking about how, you know, you came out into punk and then that was kind of like supportive to you in some way, or gave you the strength to do that. How did you feel that the punk community in general reacted to you as like coming forward as gay male punk at the time? I mean, did you have positive reaction from some quarters, and was there possibly negative reaction from other quarters?
I don't remember any of the bad. I definitely remember the good, obviously. It was nice to meet other people, other gay people in the scene as a result of the zine. It helped me build a stronger sense of community with punk. It's just wonderful, definitely wonderful.
How have you seen the level of general public acceptance of gay lifestyles change over the years from when you came out to the present?
It's definitely a world of change and evolution, and it's kind of nice. But the problem is I live in San Francisco, so in a way it's very much a bubble.
Yeah.
So what I see here in San Francisco is probably not going to always, you'll always see elsewhere. But, you know, with the changing attitudes about gay marriage, it's definitely wonderful to see happening across the country. And you know, we're finally catching up to other parts of the world with that kind of acceptance.
And I'm kind of curious, and I think this is maybe for younger people who potentially listen to this thing. Wait, how did you come out to your parents, and how did that go over? I mean, it's always it tends to be a sensitive issue for some people. Even now, when there's a greater level of acceptance, it's not a universal level of acceptance, and it tends to be a big move for some people to have to make.
Yeah. So I think my parents have known all along that I was gay. Just one day, my father had come up to me and said, "Sean, are you gay?" And I said, "Yeah." And then I remember him saying, "Okay," and walked away, and that was it. We never really talked about it. Not that he was angry or disgusted with it, but it just wasn't something that was important enough to discuss.
Yeah, okay. So they never hassled you at all? Maybe you haven't met the right woman. Like, no bullshit like that.
They still, to this day, my father will, I don't know because he forgets, but he'll say, you know, did you find a girlfriend yet? And I'm like, what?
And hey, is he saying girlfriend in quotes? he does realize he's living in San Francisco. This was kind of like the point of no return.
Well, it'd be funny because, you know, when I would go to Philadelphia, he said, you know, Sean, be careful because, you know, of AIDS or something. So he was kind of concerned in a way, you know, of that. So
I guess the other siblings have given him the grandchildren.
Yeah, exactly.
So you get along with them.
Absolutely. So, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I guess in summing the thing up, and this kind of touches on what you already said, do you feel that you retain elements of the DIY ethos, or that you employ them in, you know, in your daily life at all now, you know, at age whatever, you know, living here, doing the job that you do, and all that?
Absolutely. You know, it's given me, you know, thinking about you know, things that I've done in the past related to punk, and you know, all the publications that I've either distributed or created or helped create. You know, I always think back to that because, you know, it's kind of the creative, for me, do-it-yourself is being creative and kind of expressing yourself. And it doesn't have to be punk-related, but, you know, that's what I kind of came out with from that period. You know, not having to kind of wait for other people to do things, but, you know, do it yourself. It's funny because I look at other parts of, I have friends that were involved with punk, and you know, they've gotten older, but they found different ways to do it yourself. So now they're, you know, making bread, and you know, it's just interesting to see, you know, how they've taken that and applied it to different parts of their lives.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that in doing the interviews, and just in generally moving through the community, that people have applied that ethos to other things, and I think it creates really interesting projects. You know, really quality stuff that if it wasn't there before, and I think that that's great because. So we don't want it all to be concerned with music. And you know, as people who are older, you think that, you know, it should be expanding outwards and not remaining like some old dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you still have retain the masters of the zines and all that? Like, do you have a Sean archive?
I do have an archive. Yeah. So I have most of the Philly zines and then older ones from Jesse. And then I have some no longer fanzines. But yeah.
You can sell those on eBay for 50 cents.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good. Well, super. I really appreciate you talking to me about it.
Well, yeah, thank you. I'm glad to be part of this.
Thanks.
Thank you.